On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, I am joined by Ben Nicholson-Smith of Sportsnet to review a whole bunch of moves that happened since we last talked. Corbin Burns is going to the Diamondbacks. Teo and Sean Manaea are staying put. And we're going to talk about Vlad Jr. because I'm not going to have someone from Canada on and not talk about Vlad Jr.'s extension talks. That and so much more on this episode of Baseball Barbacast. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that would happily take the Toronto Blue Jays money. I'm Jordan Schusterman. In for Jake Mintz is Ontario's own Ben Nicholson-Smith of Sportsnet. Ben, thank you so much for co-hosting with me while Jake is still gallivanting around Asia. How are you?
Doing great, Jordan. Great to be joining you and stepping in while Jake enjoys a little breather here. Little foggy and cloudy here in Ontario, but happy to be talking baseball with you.
This is something of an unintended annual tradition. About a year ago, we had this exact same situation where Jake was on the other side of the world and I needed to find a co-host. And I tapped Ben, one of my favorite kind of newish friends in the baseball industry, Ben, with one of the OG MLB trade rumors. What was your title at the time when you were a wee little MLB TR contributor or editor? What was your title originally at Trade?
I was a writer for a number of years. I was also I was kind of managing various writers for a couple of years there for maybe 2009 to 13, something like that. So did some managing, did a lot of writing, did a lot of editing, just basically everything because it's a relatively small spot. And, you know, we all had to kind of contribute. So that was an awesome run. Saw Tim Durkas of MLBTR at the winter meetings this year.
Yes. And so while my first introduction to Ben was, you know, reading NL East notes in 2012.
Some of my best work, Jordan.
Oh, I know. We've gone back and read some incredible prose and talk about MLB trade rumors that did not actually go anywhere. I mean, those notes packages were one of a kind. But more recently, Ben, you work for Sportsnet and cover the Toronto Blue Jays, who and more than just that, of course, you're doing all MLB, and that's why you are qualified to co-host with me. You are not just a guest. This will not just be a Blue Jays centric podcast. Ben knows ball, or at least I think so. You might disagree with that by the end of this show, but that's his problem, and you can let him know on the various social media platforms. So, Ben, before we have a lot to get to. We obviously a lot has happened since Jake and I were last on these microphones. We're going to get to Corbin Burns. We're going to get to Teoscar and Sean Manaea and Gleyber Torres and all kinds of stuff. We are even going to talk about Joe Ross. But before we get to Corbin Burns, who's on the Diamondbacks now, by the way, I don't know if you... That's a thing that I think we're all still kind of processing. We're going to get to Corbin Burns in a second. But before that, I want to kind of open up just a general thought about this winter and this offseason, because 2025 is around the corner. And I got to say, I know there are some Blue Jays fans listening to this that vehemently disagree. I know there are some fan bases that have not had a good time this offseason. But I have to say, as someone who is lucky enough to do this for a living, and follow this on a day-to-day basis and talk about it at different intervals, I think this offseason has been wonderful. I think the pacing, I think the variety of moves, you've had the gargantuan contract that we all saw coming in Juan Soto, you've had trades that we all saw coming in Garrett Crochet, ones that we came out of nowhere like Kyle Tucker, you got prospect trades, you got big leaguers for big leaguers, you got guys signing where you don't expect them, you got guys still on the market, we still have stuff to look forward to in January. And I know every offseason we look and we say, oh, if only it was like baseball or if only it was like basketball or football where everyone signs in 24 hours and it's this frenzy. Like, this is what an ideal offseason feels like for baseball, and I'm curious if you feel the same way.
100%. And, you know, going back to the old MLBTR days, like I remember, let's say 2008, 2009, 2010, a lot of the time the January would be really quiet. Like there might be one free agent. It might be Prince Fielder who's hanging out there, or maybe a Matt Holliday's hanging out there, Carlos Pena. Usually it's a slugger, right? Or a closer. And that's kind of it. So the drama was over with. And then conversely, in more recent years, we had Machado and Harper really on the free agent market for a long time, really dragged, not fun at all. And I think that right now we're getting into a sweet spot. And I don't know if it's repeatable. I'm definitely not holding my breath that we see this in future seasons, but it's been awesome. And it kind of feels to me like you know, you're watching a TV show, it's really, really good. You're like, this is awesome. There's so much action that's already happened. Then you look at the episode counter and then it says you have 5 episodes left and you're like, what? How are they going to fit all of this in the next 5 episodes? Like, this is going to be pretty good.
Right, exactly. And obviously, there could still be horrors in front of us where we end up all, you know, frustrated about something. And there is a slugger out there named Pete Alonso who is struggling to find the deal that maybe he wants. But that's fine. Like, to me, until we get to mid-February, like, I'm in off-season mode. Like, I'm going a couple days at a time. I like that we have time to kind of digest. I know in this case, we got a lot to cram into one episode because it's been a while since we recorded. But I don't know. I've just been appreciating. I'm not saying that this is how it will always be. Like, I'm just acknowledging that this feels like what a good off season should feel like. And whether that's a sign of the league being more healthy or not, like, listen, there are still a lot of teams that are doing absolutely nothing because they don't want to spend, and that sucks. And like, I'm not overlooking that. There are obviously still flaws within the system and things that are going to make certain fan bases upset. But if we're just talking, if we consider all the moves going on at once, I really do feel like it has been a pretty fun winter so far. And that is a good lead into our first topic of the day. Let us get to the opener. Ben Nicholson-Smith, my dear friend, where were you when Corbin Burnes, out of nowhere, signed with the Arizona Diamondbacks, or at least reportedly agreed to a 6-year, $210 million deal with the Snakes?
Well, I don't know if this one's going to be seared into my memory as one of those where were you when moments, but hey, this is legitimately a big deal. I was probably in London, Ontario, but that's not really the point. The point is, this is surprising, and I mean, needless to say, he is a great pitcher, and if you can get him for 6 years onto any team, like, he would literally help any team, and the Diamondbacks not really considered one of the front runners for him. If anything, people thought he might go to the Giants. Obviously, Blue Jays were mentioned, Red Sox were mentioned, and the Orioles had to be considered in that mix. So Arizona was not on that list of teams, and I know we'll get into some of the reporting there from Nick Pecoro, but this is a surprise. But what a pleasant surprise for Arizona, because he makes an already deep starting rotation that much deeper.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think we spend so much time in the offseason when, of course, we get reporting around which teams are interested in which players, but the obvious way to do it is you pull up the depth charts and you pull up the rotations and you say, okay, who needs the best pitcher, right? And the Diamondbacks were not necessarily on that list, but as we learn in some of the early reporting around this deal, which has not, you know, yet gone official, and so I'm sure we'll hear more specifically from the D-backs and Corbin Burnes hopefully at some point soon, but this was a decision that Corbin Burnes and obviously Scott Boras' agent, which we won't get into a big part of this conversation as well, that Corbin Burnes wanted to pitch for the Diamondbacks. I mean, I know that sounds very simple, but that's not normally how these free agent, you know, biddings go, especially at the top of the market where we are usually saying, okay, who's just going to throw him the biggest stack of money? And in this case, there were some other factors involved. Corbin Burnes had twins earlier this season. I believe that was his second and third kids, and he already lives in Scottsdale. And then you have just some incredible reporting from Nick Pecoro, of course, knows the D-backs as well as anyone, basically that Burnes has been telling people he's wanted to pitch for the Diamondbacks and how cool it would be to pitch in Arizona. He's not from Arizona, but he is, again, has clearly been living there for a while. And then even more interesting is that the Diamondbacks were, it's not only that, oh, we didn't know that they were a mystery team, well, technically they were, it's that they were not pursuing him. They didn't start their winter and be like, we actually do think we need Corbin Burnes, right? Like, that was not how it went down. Really what it was is that at some point late in this process, as he reports, that I'll just read this from Nick's article. According to sources, the Diamondbacks were not aggressively pursuing Burnes, but rather that the pitcher's representatives came to them late in the free agent process expressing a desire to pitch in Arizona. Sources said Burnes' agent Scott Boras opened dialogue directly with Ken Kendrick, the Diamondbacks' managing general partner. Now, this is where it gets very interesting. And we're going to get to the Scobo here in a second. But this premise of Corbin Burnes deciding, okay, listen, and there's also some reporting about, oh, you know, lower taxes in Arizona. And by the way, that's a real thing, because if we're weighing these offers, if we're just talking about how much money these guys are actually getting, maybe it isn't as much if there was some other team out there that was offering him $30 million more over X amount of time, and there's deferrals involved, and we'll get to the opt-out in a second. But this was a like, hey, I want to come here. That is not very often how this is working. Sure, we have like reunions. We're going to talk about Sean Manaea and Teoscar Hernandez, where guys are like, I want to stay here. Let's figure this out. This is, I mean, I'm not saying it's certainly not unprecedented, but it certainly is a different kind of top free agent process playing out.
Oh, yeah. Feels a bit more like NBA style to just like point like I'm going here. Who knew? Corbin Burns would be the one to usher that forward in Major League Baseball. But good for him. I mean, it sounds like a great fit for him. Obviously, he can live year round in Arizona. And I look at this team right now. I kind of see them at this moment as the biggest threat to the Dodgers in that division. And, you know, the Giants, they still have some work to do. The Padres have a whole offseason's worth of work to do. You know, the Rockies are the Rockies. So, you know, you end up in a situation where I could see Arizona kind of pushing the Dodgers for a good part of the season with that rotation depth, where it's like, oh, not only is Jordan Montgomery now maybe pushed to the outskirts, but, you know, Ryan Nelson, I go to the Fangraphs depth chart, who started 25 games with a 2-WAR season for the Diamondbacks last year, he's not in their projected rotation. So they have depth there, which is essential.
Yeah. But again, I think, you know, Ben Clemens wrote about this in Fangraphs, like, yes, in theory, like, good for them. Like, just because we look at the Dodgers and say that's impossible, no one's ever going to stop them, doesn't mean you shouldn't try. And so we would love more teams to find themselves in a situation where it's like, let's not try to win 85 games. This is a move because you want to win 90 or you want to win 95. And that is appreciated and honestly a rarity. And also, when we get back to the ownership dynamic, also part of the reporting from Nick Pecoro saying that, you know, a source described Ken Kendrick's thinking of seeing the chance to sign Burns as being too good of an opportunity to pass up, which, right, because there's only so many players where it's like, okay, who cares about the fit? As you mentioned at the top, he makes every team better. There's not a team that doesn't need Corbin Burns. We just assumed it would be the team that desperately needed Corbin Burns that was going to end up giving him the most money. But one other thing about the Diamondbacks fit before we get back to Boris that I want to hit on here is the opt-out. This is very important and also relevant to the Scott Boras conversation. There is an opt-out after the second year of this deal. And while I think when you look at it at first and you say, okay, well, why would the Diamondbacks stretch to do this if they do already have all this rotation depth? With Zach Gallen and with Merrill Kelly becoming free agents after this upcoming season, there would be a bit of a void. And in theory, getting Corbin Burns covers you up and be like, all right, Zach Gallen and Merrill Kelly, thanks for the memories. You guys can go get paid elsewhere. We have Corbin Burns. We got Corbin Burns. We got Brandon Pfaadt. We already invested in Eduardo Rodriguez. And at this point, Jordan Montgomery is probably long gone. But, you know, that's still a pretty solid, you know, core that you got there. And so, you know, they have him for at least 2 years for sure. But it is not an accident that in this creative deal where he went somewhere where we didn't expect, that Corbin Burns, who is a year younger than Max Fried and is 2 years younger than Blake Snell, could just re-enter the market again in 2 years and absolutely cash in. And maybe he loves it in Arizona and they keep winning and he's like, great, I'm here. I'll stay with my 4 years and $100 million remaining. Like, that's totally possible. And maybe he declines and he clearly is going to stay on the big contract. That's all possible. But there's also a situation where he's just a Cy Young contender the next 2 years. And he's like, great, that was fun. I got to see my twins grow up for the first 2 years. And now I'm going to go get paid by the Giants or by whoever. And that's good. That's part of the deal here. And I just think that opt out is a huge part of this, I have to imagine, consideration for both sides.
100%. And I don't have the structure in front of me, but let's just say it's distributed evenly. Then the question in 2 years becomes, can Corbin Burns beat 140 over four? And I mean, just based on where the prices have gone for pitching, right? Like, yeah, you know, we can get to, you know, Manaea and Ovaldi and all these guys. And okay, you're even a number four starter. You're getting $25 million a year. Like, who knows where the prices are in 2 years' time for a guy who's a number one or two starter?
And this is a different conversation than the one we had for 20 minutes at the start of this winter about Gerrit Cole. Because Gerrit Cole, when he was doing his like opt-out, fake-out with the Yankees, like, oh, you're going to have to pay me more even though I'm owed all this money, like, already in his mid-30s, has these elbow issues. And of course, Corbin Burns could get hurt anyway. Hopefully not. But like, all these pitchers are going to be risky. But there's also probably a part about it with Arizona where it's like, hey, listen, if he wants to opt out after giving us two awesome years and go take his mid-30s elsewhere, and we don't have to pay for that, God bless. It was a fun 2 years with Corbin Burns randomly at the top of the Diamondbacks rotation. Like, I love that. That's great.
It truly could be a win-win.
Yeah. So now, as for the Diamondbacks, and then we'll finish with Boris here. You mentioned all that depth. Jordan Montgomery, now already very much in trade rumors. They're trying to dump that contract, and we'll get to him in a second. But this is, they're in a position, they've already, you know, they already traded from this depth somewhat, but in the Josh Naylor trade, they traded Slade Ciccone to Cleveland. But when you talk about them as a threat to the Dodgers, like there's still kind of incomplete parts of this roster too. And I do like this team, but this is a team that had the best, you know, offense in the league. But a lot of that was because of Jock Peterson and Randall Grichuk and Christian Walker.
Right.
And they've already replaced Walker with Naylor, but the lineup does not look as fearsome as it did. And now my biggest question about Arizona for the rest of this winter is, okay, you have clearly stretched beyond what we all thought was possible financially to get Corbin Burns, and good for you. But does that mean you're tapped out? Does that mean you have to make these other moves to make additional signings? It's like, this is great. This is a win. I'm not saying this is a bad thing. But how does this move impact their ability to fill out the rest of the roster, whether that's the bullpen and whether that's the rest of the lineup? That's my biggest question about Arizona.
And I guess if anything, at least the move reflects a willingness on the part of ownership, on the part of Kendrick, to say, hey, we can push this a little bit. It's not a hard line. It's not a fixed line in the same way that it might be in some places. So if he's willing to push a little for Corbin Burns, I'm not saying he's going to do that for every player, but if it's the trade deadline and they desperately need a reliever or they desperately need a platoon bat, it's hard to imagine that once you're this far in, I don't know, without knowing the details of Arizona, it's hard to imagine that this is going to stop them from doing that. But I think it's a good flag to raise.
Yes, I completely agree with that. Now let's wrap with the Scott Boris element here. Okay, it's time for another edition of the Scobo Scobo. The Scott Boris scoreboard, where anytime Scott Boris does something, whether a client of his signs or he just says something weird, we have to decide whether it was a win, a loss, or a draw. And this is an interesting one to grade, my friend Ben, because on first glance, you say, oh, well, hold on a second. Max Fried got 8 years. You know, Blake Snell got this outrageous AAV too. Corbin Burns is better than those guys, and he had Scott Boras. He should crush the number that Steven Strasburg got. He should get 300. He's going to, with all these teams that desperately want pitching, this number should be way higher than 6-2-10. However, I think this is a dub. I think this is a win, and here's why. What just happened last year involving Scott Boras and the Arizona Diamondbacks? He got them to give Jordan Montgomery a bunch of money at the end of the offseason, and their owner, Ken Kendrick, publicly was like, that was a catastrophe. I hated that. That was bad.
True.
Jordan Montgomery left Scott Boras. Jordan Montgomery is still in the Diamondbacks at the time of this recording. And somehow, this same... Now, I don't know if Scott Boras was directly talking to Ken Kendrick when they paid Jordan Montgomery. Maybe not. But the fact that this same pairing has now resulted in a situation where he went to them and said, he wants to pitch for you. The leverage involved there is fascinating, right? Because why did the Diamondbacks necessarily have to give him the biggest contract in franchise history if he that badly wanted to pitch there? And I just think that dynamic... Now, listen, it's not like they didn't have to. And we still are in the early stages of understanding a lot of conflicting reporting about exactly what other teams were involved. And if you want to comment on that from the Blue Jays perspective, you can. But I just think that this example, this reporting of Scott Boras going to Ken Kendrick a year after he got completely screwed by giving one of his other clients a lot of money and is still able to get the largest contract in franchise history, I think that's a win.
100%. I think that's great context for this. And like so soon afterwards, like literally the same calendar year. So it's kind of wild.
And not to mention, and again, Bumgarner, not to mention, it's not like the Erod deal is off to a great start. Not to mention the Greinke deal that they ended up having to trade, right? And the parallels with that are also interesting, where it totally came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Listen, I understand why you would think that Corbin Burns is a better bet than all those guys. That's fine. I mean, Greinke was coming off a hell of a season. That was a little bit of a different situation. But at the same time, I mean, the characters involved here. I mean, it's impossible to deny. I mean, that's just an amazing sequence that he would be able to give a call and act like that didn't just happen.
Totally. And I think, to me, the reason this is a win for Scott Boras is because the job of an agent is to provide his client with options, right?
This too. This too, 100%.
It's not to get only one offer. Ideally, you're going to have, you know, a number of offers, and then the client can choose. And so in this case, let's say the Giants, I don't know if they made an offer, but they would have indicated a willingness to go to X. The Blue Jays would have indicated a willingness to go to Y. And then the Diamondbacks, all right, well, let's see if we can get them in. Can we get them close? You know, if you guys can get close to these other teams, then, you know, my client would really like to sign with you and he'd be really open to that. So let's see what you can do. Okay, boom. Here come the Diamondbacks. And now Corbin Burnes can choose from, you know, three scenarios, maybe some of which are a little bit more concrete than others, and make a choice for himself and for his family. So to me, and look, if he signed for $10 million to go with the Diamondbacks, that would be an L for Scott Boras, obviously. But this is 210. Like, this is serious, yeah, serious
it's 210
money.
And with the opt out.
So, like, that's the thing.
All, as you mentioned, it's providing for the client. It's giving them the opportunity to do something clearly, because there's probably other situations where it's like, I would love to play. Like, it is player X's dream, player X top free agent's dream to play for the Brewers or the Reds, right? And like, if that's true, you're going to have to settle, right? You're not going to get $200 million. This is not going to happen. And a lot of us thought you wouldn't be able to get $200 million out of the Diamondbacks right now, not just because of what happened last year, but because of just the rest of their offseason needs, and they were still able to do that. So yeah, that is my opinion. If you want to look at this explicitly being like, well, still, he should have gotten way more than Fried and Snell, like, I get that. I understand that. But I have a feeling that Corbin Burnes is feeling pretty good right now. And so because of that, we are going to give this a big-time dub. All right, so that's Corbin Burnes. He's on the Diamondbacks now. Again, it's such a stunning move that we could do a lot more on it, but we have a lot more transactions to get to. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we'll talk about Sean Manaea, Gleyber Torres, Sean Armstrong? Okay, no, we'll talk about Jock Peterson and more when we get back on this episode of Baseball Bites. And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Jordan Schusterman here with Ben Nicholson Smith in for Jake Mintz. Our audience is so lucky. They get to hear the Canadian tones of BNS. The Bank of Nova Scotia has arrived to give us his opinions on Teoscar Hernandez not signing with the Blue Jays. We have five other major transactions since we last recorded this podcast. We are going to begin with Teoscar Hernandez. Let's go around the league. Ben, you're familiar with Mr. Hernandez. You watched him play baseball for several years in Toronto. And there was a brief moment this winter as the negotiation with the Los Angeles Dodgers, where he clearly would like, always wanted to return to, as you can understand why, where it was like, maybe Teoscar won't go back to the Dodgers. Maybe he will return to the Blue Jays. Maybe he will sign with the Red Sox. Maybe another team could really use Teoscar Hernandez. But ultimately, after some back and forth, we have arrived at a new deal for Teo to stay with the Dodgers. 3 years, $66 million. Yes, they are deferring like a third of it. I don't care. I am so done talking about deferrals. There was a bunch of deferrals in the Corbin Burnes deal. There's deferrals in all kinds of contracts. It's not an interesting topic to me anymore. I'll just get that out of the way. I'm not going to talk about that part.
Totally agree on that, by the way. Okay, I'm out on deferrals. Yeah.
And that's also firmly in the category of not a fun podcast topic.
No.
Really? You guys want to hear us talk about that?
No, we can do better.
Let's talk ball. Let's talk about Teo, the baseball player. This guy, dream season. Could you have a better 1 year deal, right? I mean, sure, he didn't win MVP, but arguably the most complete season of his career, becomes beloved on the team. He is the second most consistent, you know, player on the Dodgers, right? With Mookie being out for 2 months. Freddie Freeman in the regular season was very good, but he was not at like MVP level Freddie Freeman. Teo played almost every game and was just a beast, right? Goes, it does it in October.
He's crying on stage at the World Series parade. He wants to go back to the Dodgers. All is well. I kind of thought that he was going to go somewhere else, not because he didn't want to actually stay, but because I thought his deal was going to get him something that other teams would give him too much to pass up. And that the Dodgers, especially after signing Michael Conforto, would be like, listen, Teo, we love you, but the way we operate, we are not going to, even though we have infinite money, we are not just going to give you whatever you want. But it seems like they found some common ground here.
Yeah. Yeah. Incredible, incredible fit there. I mean, Teoscar Hernandez, just such a fun baseball player. Like the way that he would vibe with Shohei Ohtani and just really everyone, even covering him going back years in Toronto, like he was doing the same stuff when it was Freddie Galvis and Sam Gavilio. And, you know, like it was, Teo was the same guy.
Shout out to Sam Gavilio.
He really was. Like he was just, he was always the same guy. He's always been super friendly, had a great time, just like great, great vibes, the sunflower seeds. We've all seen it now. And so, of course, the Dodgers are a fit for that. What team isn't a fit for that if you're trying to compete, if you're trying to win? Even after, you know, going out and signing Michael Conforto, I do think that that makes sense. They'll find the at-bats and they'll make the pieces work. Obviously, Dave Roberts is really good at that. And it's not exactly hard to find, just, you know, play Teoscar. You'll benefit from that. You'll get a 30-homer season. You don't have to mix and match. So, yeah, I think it's a great fit for the Dodgers. I had heard initially that they were, you know, kind of starting really slow with their offers, like maybe 1 or 2 year deal. And then they obviously worked their way up to 3. And at that point, you have a path to a deal. But, you know, this is a pretty reasonable deal. It's basically in the amount of the QO, like to get a 30 homer hitter. And look, there's going to be a point where he declines, and that might be in the course of this deal. And that's fine. The Dodgers can afford it and absorb it. But I like this deal for the Dodgers.
Yeah, it just makes their lineup that much more terrifying. And obviously, I'm really high on Conforto. I love that fit. And I think that I thought he was being set up to do a version of what Teo just did. Now, it's a little bit different. He's not as gregarious and lovable and all these things, and obviously has been way more out of the spotlight in San Francisco. But I thought, like, you looked at the underlying stuff with Conforto, and I was like, great, they're probably looking at him and being like, he'll take our 1 year deal and he'll put up a 125 OPS plus and we'll be happy with that. And we'll give Andy Pages time and we have Tommy Edman and Dalton Rushing will come up. Like we'll be okay. They would have been fine without Teoscar, right? Of course, a lot of fans would have been upset, but for them to still make this happen is again, I mean, the lineup is ridiculous. we already knew that, but we didn't even see this lineup fully operational at times last year because Muncy was hurt, because Will Smith was kind of hot and cold, because Mookie was injured. And now you put this in and you add him to Conforto and who knows what else you get. And Lux, you know, what we saw in the second half. And it's just an Edmund for a full season potentially. Like there's just so much going on there. And I don't know if there's another move for them in the position player group. And I still have questions about this whole Mookie in the infield thing. But I feel like and Pages, who like I felt like showed a lot enough to where you thought maybe he was going to play more. I don't really know where he fits into this. But when you're the Dodgers, you're not going to be like, no, sorry, we have to let this young guy. Like, no, like if the opportunity's there. Aaron Teo wants to come back, then you make this happen.
Exactly. And this is where the Dodgers are the Dodgers. They just keep layering on at each sort of juncture that you can add. Hey, it's Tommy Edman at the trade deadline. He goes on to be NLCS MVP. You add Teoscar again in the offseason. You add a Conforto. You have Rushing coming up from the minor leagues. Like this is, you have to do all these things to, you know, to some degree in order to compete. And the Dodgers do so many of these things so well that their roster is just going to be deeper. And it's not, you know, we've seen them do it on the pitching side where they just stack arms and then, hey, whoever's healthy at a given moment, maybe you win the World Series in a year where, you know, Kershaw and Dustin May are hurt. They kind of do the same thing now on the position player side where they're just stacking hitters and they'll make the pieces work. Like they're not going to have too many games where, you know, they have three, you know, awesome hitters on the bench. Like it's just, as you know, it's just the way baseball works.
And yeah, I am curious, like, Kike still a free agent? I'm sure he wants to be back in the Dodgers. And I don't know if there's still room for him and Chris Taylor and some of these other guys. Again, these aren't problems. It doesn't matter. It's just like, I am curious what that final, you know, opening day roster ends up looking like. But also, yeah, you consider the offense. It's like, all right, maybe Ohtani is like 10% worse because he's a little tired because he's pitching now again. Yeah. Like, great. Now you also have all these other guys that can show up and have 900 OPS over the 6 weeks, right? Like that's almost the whole team can do that for you, which is a pretty amazing place to be. Now, the last thing about Teo is, okay, we could do this for all these guys. Okay, well, who didn't get him? I don't want to spend as much time speculating on the runners up for all of these, not just because I'm talking to someone who covers the Blue Jays, but also because, again, like, it's more important what this does mean and not, okay, obviously these other teams are going to pivot in some form, whether that's Boston, whether that's Toronto. Tim Healy reporting that the Mets made an offer to Teoscar, and I think that that is relevant to our next topic to some degree. But obviously, this was a player that I did start to think was not going back to the Dodgers, and the fact that he does, you know, the rich get richer, and credit to them for making it happen. And I'm happy for Teo that he gets to kind of still be a part of that group, because obviously it was an awesome fit. Speaking of awesome fits, where guys are very happy to be returning, Sean Manaea, left-handed pitcher returning to the New York Mets on a 3-year, $75 million deal. Let's just get this out of the way. Sean Manaea, Scott Boras client, Scobo update. This is a draw. This is fine.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, would have been 96 over 4.
If he had gotten a fourth year,
yeah,
sniffing $100 million, okay, now we're talking. Yeah. I didn't understand. I could sort of get it almost more with Fried and Snell. Oh, well, if they can get this, then Burns, he's that much. I don't view Manaea as that much better than Severino, even moving forward. I know he was down the stretch. Like, maybe we could disagree on that.
Yeah, I would disagree on that.
Okay. So that's why we can have that conversation. So let's talk about Sean Manaea, right? How do we get to 3 years, $75 million? Kind of one of the wilder stories of the season, I would say, right? I mean, this is his third time in free agency, because the last 2 years, it was not really what he was looking for, because he was not coming off the seasons that he was hoping for, right? This was a guy when Oakland seemed to be heading towards a pretty significant payday, and then he gets traded to the Padres before the last year of his contract, and he's bad. You know, there was some ERA blow-up starts in there, and maybe he wasn't as bad as his overall numbers indicated, but it was not a situation where it was like, oh, awesome, I'm excited to sign Sean Manaea. He goes to the Giants, and it's like, okay, he's fine. I mean, he's bouncing between the rotation and the bullpen, that you're not feeling that much better about him, but still good enough to opt out again. And then the Mets were like, come to Queens. We'll make you better. But remember, he's pretty good for the first half, but he's not otherworldly. Like, he was still just like kind of normal, average 3-4 starter. And then he watches Chris Sale dice up the Mets and is like, what if I drop my arm slot a little bit? Now, here's my question about that, Ben. Was that the first time he'd watched Chris Sale in his life?
I presume it wasn't, but something about the timing worked, right? Like, and I'm sure you've seen the videos of him throwing off like the opposite bullpen mound, like, yeah, such a cool angle, and yeah, obviously tough on hitters.
Yeah, but also, it's not like Sean Manaea was giving you a normal look before. It was already kind of a funky thing that relied on command, relied on deception. But that's part of his story. Mid-July, he drops his arm slot even more, and he carves the rest of the way. He's pitching deeper into games. He's throwing more strikes. He's throwing more sinkers, and he's getting weak contact. He's getting strikeouts. It all culminates in this incredible postseason appearance against the Phillies, where he goes 7 scoreless, and he leaves to a standing ovation. Good against the Dodgers at the first start in the CS, and then not so good at the end. But by that point, the Mets fans were like, we love you. You're amazing. He fits in perfectly on the field, off the field. All of it was great. And so then you had a kind of same situation where it was like, all right, well, he clearly would love to be there. Do they view him as a priority? Same thing as Teoscar, right? Is this someone they view as a priority? And I think based on how the rest of the offseason shook out, it seems like yes, to a degree. Not that they necessarily overpaid, but this is why I find this deal so interesting, is what do we think about this Mets rotation right now? This team, of course, they got Juan Soto, and they still have more work to do too. But are they done? Like, this is a pretty interesting way to address the rotation. As it stands right now, you have Kodai Senga coming off. I love Kodai Senga, and I think he still has the highest upside on this team. But coming off a season where he barely pitched, I don't know what to expect. You have Sean Manaea coming back in, who we feel like we know what we're getting. After the adjustments that he made, he gets to continue that momentum and stay there. And we think we know, but we're still working on a pretty small sample of like this version of him, right? Then you have Frankie Montas, big bet that like we can make him a lot better, maybe. Clay Holmes becoming a starter again. And then David Peterson, who's like good guy to have around. Paul Blackburn's still there. Tyler McGill has shown flashes of being a good back-end starter. But like, what is this the rotation of a team that I'm like excited about? Now, I guess we could have said the same thing last year, and that's part of it. But what do we make of this kind of pitching staff at this point?
I think it's solid. It's intriguing. It's enough to be competitive. Clearly, the high end upside is lacking right there. When you look at even comparing them to some more middling teams, it's just not really there. And I think that, you know, Sean Manaea, he can legitimately start playoff games for you. Obviously, Senga can too if he's going well. Maybe those are your main two guys. You know, Montas, who knows? Clay Holmes is a pretty big unknown at this point. So you kind of see how it looks and see who emerges in the course of the year. I think it's probably a good bet that they're going to be in the market for starting pitching at the trade deadline, barring, you know, any sort of further moves. I thought that they would have been a great fit for Corbin Burnes and maybe could have been one of those teams that pushed and really tried to tempt him away from Arizona. Maybe that's 240, 250, 260. Don't know. From afar, it looked like they could have been a team to do something like that. But obviously, you know, they have a solid rotation now. Like, I think there's, in my mind, there's very little doubt that they can compete. You know, it would look better if they had an ace in there. I think that goes without saying.
Yeah, and we'll talk about, you know, Boston. I mean, I like their rotation a little bit more at this point. But, you know, you could debate that. Maybe that's disrespectful. And as Jake has talked about so many times on here, having covered them up close, like, the Mets have proven a lot in getting the most out of these guys. So maybe they will hit on all of them, and Manaea will be the second half version for the whole year, and Senga will be healthy, and Montas will be his best season since, you know, his peak in Oakland, and Holmes, the Holmes transition is perfect. Like, all that stuff is good. That's, I mean, if all those things happen, let alone everyone stays healthy, like, I don't know. That's just, so there's still some pitchers out there. Maybe there is another trade to be made. I'm just interested that, and by the way, there's still some questions at the bottom of their lineup too. And the fact that they were interested in Teoscar to some degree tells me that they're probably still, obviously the Pete thing is the biggest question still looming over their franchise. But while everyone focuses on Pete, I'm still looking at this rotation. I'm like, huh, okay, right? Because last year we weren't thinking about the Mets. They were in this transition, but now it's like, no, you have Juan Soto. Like, you should be trying to win the World Series. I'm not looking at this and being like, they are definitely trying to win the World Series, but maybe that's disrespectful. And it could still be definitely a good group. And I think Senga is just like such a massively important litmus test, right? Or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Phrase. Because like, that's the whole thing. I mean, he was one of the best pitchers in baseball as a rookie. And then last year he was a complete nothing. So,
and his volume, you know, volume, is it 45 innings or is it 145 mm-hmm. innings? Cause mm-hmm. you know, obviously those 100 innings, if you transplant them from Senga to, you know, whoever's yep. at AAA for the Mets, it's probably going to be a pretty big drop off.
Yep. 100%. But I still do think that the Mets, they have there's more moves to come here. I don't know if it's a big one, but a big one that's not Pete is Pete, whatever. We will be talking about the Mets plenty more leading up to the season.
And Manaea at 75 over three, I mean, this to the Mets is just, it's nothing to them, nothing. Right? Like, it's kind of like when the Cardinals go out and they sign Miles Michaelis. It's like, that's what it is to them. You know, it's like,
right. And it's Sean Manaea, who's like, could start playoff games and look great. Yeah.
No, exactly. Like, Sean Manaea, and I just think the deception there, like, who knows how it plays over a full season. But when hitters are seeing that for the first time, it's just not going to be an easy look.
Yeah, no, 100%. So again, it's good. And like you mentioned, now they, you know, they defer a bunch of this too, because I will say that the deferral stuff, yes, Steve Cohen, infinite money glitch for sure. When you're that far into the luxury tax, like, every dollar is that much more. And so if they can even, you know, lop off like $3 million from the AAV, which is what the deferrals do, that's why they're doing that. And Sean and I can get his money in 2041 or whatever. Let's stay with the starting pitching market and talk about Walker Buehler signing with the Boston Red Sox. We'll keep this one a little bit tighter because we're going to do some more Red Sox chat later this week. So I'm going to kind of clear out here, give you the rock. The Red Sox sign Walker Buehler to what is essentially a qualifying offer. Now, it can get up a 1 year, $21 million, can get up to, I think, more 23, 24 based on the number of starts that he makes. What do you make of this one? This is another rotation that has kind of been rebuilt and reshaped, and a team that has a lot more pressure to win in some ways than the Mets after the last few seasons. What do you make of this deal?
I see it as bold. I think the Red Sox, when it comes to their pitching moves, have been pretty bold, and that's what you'd expect from Craig Breslow, given his pitching background. And people describe him as a really bold thinker, someone who's not afraid to, you know, just do what he thinks is best and see what happens. Like, the thing is with Garrett Crochet and with Walker Buehler, there is risk here, right? These are not the, like, plug-and-play, quote-unquote, dependable options. We all know there's risk with every starting pitcher, but if you wanted to do that, maybe it's like Ovaldi and I don't know, Manaea? Is that like the middle tier for pitching?
I mean, pretty much, yeah. I mean, obviously the other guy in that tier is Nick Pivetta, and they're clearly done
so
with him.
Be but, him. But, you know, you could go a little bit more, quote-unquote, dependable. And I see them embracing risk right here. I don't know how it's going to play out, but Crochet obviously has ace upside. We'll see how the volume goes. And then with Walker Buehler, he just wasn't very good for much of the season, right? Then we see him in the playoffs and building into the World Series, obviously got the final out of the World Series. So he was looking really, really good at that point. And we've seen teams make these big bets on small samples when it comes to pitchers and their effectiveness and really buy into what they're doing right now. It doesn't really matter what he did in April of 2024, because that's almost a year ago now. So what was he doing in the most recent sample? Teams seem willing to make those bets. Breslow seems, you know, convicted in these, in some of these pitching moves. Gotta love the prospects that they have coming up, thanks to Chaim Bloom and all kinds of other folks with the Red Sox.
Hell
but
yeah.
Hey, it's working out, right? So they have all that percolating. Now you add some pitching. I mean, the Red Sox are in a good spot. Clearly, they could do more, and they need to do more, but they're in a good spot.
Different kinds of risk with Crochet and Buehler, right? I mean, you say Crochet ace upside, certainly on volume. I mean, he was one of the best pitchers of baseball when he was on the mound, right? So there's still certainly questions about the durability. I don't really have any questions about who he is in terms of performance-wise, even though it is a small sample. Whereas Buehler, you know, maybe he goes out there and has a 5 ERA for the first few months. I think, like with the Mets, though, this rotation hinges a lot on some of these other guys that are already there. And you think about how good Tanner Houck and Cutter Crawford were for the first half, and then they were really bad for the second half. What versions are we getting from those guys, let alone Bayo, who they extended and was certainly disappointing? So some of the internal candidates are also really interesting. Giolito, who said he's going to be ready to go. I know people are like, he'll be back in June. Like, no, he said on Rob Bradford's podcast, like, I'm ready to compete. He doesn't, you know, obviously he wasn't expecting to have to compete for a rotation spot, but he said he's ready to do that if he needs to. So Giolito is another very interesting wild card in this mix for them. But as we've seen, the good teams have more pitching than they know what to do with, and that puts them in a good spot. Do they have another move on offense in the outfield left for them? We'll see, another trade. I would be surprised if they add another starting pitcher at this point, but you know, at the same time, I don't think they're necessarily done shopping this winter. But again, more Red Sox chat coming later this week. Two more moves. Jock Peterson. We love Jock. We were clamoring over text for the last month and a half. Jays, what are you doing? Just give Jock Peterson whatever he wants. And I got to say, Jock Peterson got a lot of money from the Texas Rangers. 2 years, $37 million for a guy who was a DH. He played zero innings in the outfield in Arizona in 2024 and obviously was heavily platooned, as you would expect. A lot of the projections had him in the 2 years, 25, 28, 37 with an opt-out after the first year. This is the Rangers saying, okay, yes, we just traded Nathaniel Lowe, but we signed Jake Berger and we still need this offense to go forward. This is not just about replacing, you know, we are not just reinvesting the money we saved on Lowe. We are spending more. We are actually pushing forward again. And Texas is now a very interesting team. Their team I highlighted at the beginning of the winter as a team that I was just curious what direction they were going to go after a really quiet offseason after their World Series. What do you make of this fit?
I love it. I think Jock Peterson kind of is the ideal prototype of the lefty slugger who just destroys right-handed pitching, can hit you a big home run, can hit a home run off of really good pitching, has done it in big spots before, still is relatively, you know, in his prime. I just love this move. And I think that, you know, if you go by dollars per war, this is never going to be the best bargain of the offseason. Yeah, it's 2 years for a DH. It's a lot of money, but it's not really that much money, right? Like, it's the same dollar figure as Clay Holmes, or, you know, I'm sure some of these other relievers, like Carlos Estevez is probably going to get the same amount. Like, Jock Peterson impacts your team, right? He actually has a positive impact. And so, end of the day, the Rangers might not be the most efficient spenders, quote unquote, but they have Jock Peterson. So I think they're pretty happy going to bed at night knowing that when a right-handed pitcher's on the mound, you're going to have a weapon, whether he's starting the game for you or coming off the bench. That's someone you really want on your team. And I just really like that move as a result.
We have not had Jocktober since 2021.
That's right. It's been too long,
but that brings up the question about this Texas Rangers team. I can understand when you add him to this lineup with the names involved, you'd be like, oh man, look at this lineup. Now, I caution everybody that we just did this last year after their World Series, and we were like, whoa, boy, you add a full season of Evan Carter and Wyatt Langford, and oh man, this team's going to be unstoppable. They were very stoppable. And you look at this team now, and it's like, okay, I feel Semien, great. Seager, awesome, one of the best players in the world. I love Wyatt Langford. I think he'll continue to be great, and I believe in Chuck. Adolis Garcia, huge question mark. Like, I don't know what in the world to make of him after his past season. Josh Young, love him. Hasn't been able to stay healthy whatsoever. How good is he? We have not been able to see him play consistently. Evan Carter, massive question mark. What is he on offense over a full season facing lefties? Is he healthy? What is he? Jake Berger, I like him. But, mm-hmm. you know, that is a very specific kind of player type that is... will impact your team, but obviously has some limitations. And then Jonah Heim is coming off of kind of a disastrous season and is the reason why they signed Kyle Higashioka. So there's still a lot of reasons. I mean, there's still a lot of good upside is absolutely still present. But there's a lot of guys here that still have a lot to prove. And the bigger question is this pitching staff, I also don't know what to make of. Yes, they bring back Eovaldi. their bullpen additions so far have been Jacob Webb, Sean Armstrong, Hobie Milner, and Robert Garcia. None are, you know, household names. One or two of those guys will be very good. One of them or two of them will be very bad. That's just relievers, and that's fine. I'm interested in this rotation. Eovaldi, DeGrom, John Gray. By the way, Jacob DeGrom starting opening day, folks. Let's not.
Yeah. was there any doubt?
let's just talk about DeGrom here for a couple minutes. Are we, like, I'm probably guilty of this. Like, I look at this pitching staff, and I'm like, this is ridiculous. Why am I taking this team seriously? And then I'm like, wait a minute. Jacob DeGrom's like the best pitcher in the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
but is he? I don't know. And so DeGrom is just like this thing where it's like, well, yeah, if he's the best pitcher in the world, then this rotation's going to be fine. And if he's not, then we have a lot of the same problems that we've had over the last couple of years, even when they did win the World Series.
Yeah. And I think too, like there's uncertainty further down too. Like Kamar Rocker, is he going to step up and give them 20 starts with a 3-4 ERA, or is it going to be 8 starts with a 5-6, right?
It's really in the bullpen, just, right? You know,
yeah, or Jack Leiter. It's hard to know. So I think there is a lot of uncertainty here. I think to me, they're in this like bubble group of teams. They're not clearly out of it, like obviously your White Sox. But, you know, we're talking about a league where the Tigers and the Royals made the playoffs last year. And, you know, I know maybe we'll get to some Tiger stuff in a minute here, but I don't necessarily see the Tigers and Royals as like these unstoppable forces that are destined to return to the playoffs. Like the Royals have done very little. They acquired Jonathan India. They extend Michael Wacha. That's been their offseason so far, right?
So silent since then.
Yeah, yep, there is room to displace one or both of those teams. And so could the Rangers be one of those teams? Yeah, I'm not counting on it, but I think it could happen.
Yeah, no, they've put themselves in a position where we will be talking about them when we're making our projections. We'll be like, ooh, are they going to be one of those wild card teams? Are they going to push the Astros? Like, we'll talk about them, but there's still a roster where I'm just like, ooh, wow, is okay? Is this really what we're going for? But I would expect them to stay active here at least until opening day. I think there's still some moves to be made there. One more before we take one more break. Gleyber Torres. I felt like I was the last believer in this guy. Everyone, and by the way, the market reflected this. I know there was some reporting that he had larger deals on the table than the 1 year, $15 million that he gets from the Detroit Tigers. And he decided, hey, I'm one of the youngest free agents available. I am going to try to have a good year in a talk about change of scenery, right? Finally, not on the Yankees anymore, where he was having a good time, but it seems like the Yankees were not having a good time with him on the team. I know a lot of fans are like, great, good riddance. I understand that, but I also think that there's clearly still talent here and someone who not that long ago was one of the best offensive second basemen in the league. And he's saying, great, I'll just hit the market again next year after a big year, and then I will get the deal that I'm searching for. I understand why I'm not getting the bigger offers. And Detroit is an interesting fit. Obviously, it kind of creates a domino effect in their infield. They've already said they're going to be moving Colt Keith, who spent most of his rookie season at second base. He'll be playing first base. What does that mean for Torque? I like Gleyber. I think Gleyber is going to be good for them. I think there's still a lot of questions about what this lineup really is, and maybe they are still trying to add to it, whether it's Bregman or someone else. But I don't know. I'm just a Glaber believer, and I think that a year from now we will be talking about him getting a multi-year deal from somebody else.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think it's a good deal for the Tigers. Like, even if he was going to take a one-year deal, I honestly would have guessed it was more like in the QO range.
Sure.
You know, we saw Marcus Semien do that a few years back now. So I would have guessed that a one-year deal might be 21, 22, something like that. In any case, he helps deepen an offense that really needed it. I mean, we saw a lot of Wenzel Perez and Matt Vierling in big moments for the Tigers down the stretch and in the playoffs. So it worked for them, obviously, but having an established hitter who's going to be, let's say, a two war player, he can hold his own at the plate, hit you 15 or 20 home runs, that's a really good thing for this lineup. And I still think there's room for one more, hitter, whether that's a Santander, whether that's a Bregman. I don't know if they go quite that big. It'll be interesting to see. I still think they could use pitching after adding Alex Cobb, who, yeah, you know, agreed. How, you know, what an interesting contrast that those are the two ads, both 1 year, $15 million.
So strange.
It's very strange. And yeah, I still think that there's enough rotation uncertainty here. You don't want to count on them having to do the, you know, opener mix and match thing that works so well for them down the stretch. I just don't think you can do that sustainably, even with AJ Hinch at the helm. I think you need more. So I think more pitching, more hitting would help here.
Totally agree. That's like, I'd sign Nick Pivetta. I'm like, again, yeah. Glaber and Nick Pivetta. I'm in, and Conforto, all these guys, everyone's like, that guy sucks. I'm like, no, I'm in. Giants, no, sign Nick Pivetta.
Pivetta would be awesome for them.
Yeah, yeah.
And they've done some really good work with pitchers coming over there, right? With Jack Flaherty coming over there. So you would think that they have, a pretty strong pitch that they can make with their pitching infrastructure and pitching coaching.
Because they need bulk, and that's why the Cobb deal is just so mind-blowing.
Yeah, I don't mind it on its own. It's just you've got to supplement beyond that.
Right. That can't be your only pitching addition. So let's see if the Tigers stay busy. But I am pro Glaber. I don't know if Jake would have been on here having watched him up close a lot more in New York and been like, no, not for me. Obviously, that's how the Yankees felt. And I can't believe that was even like a news cycle yesterday where it was like Yankees didn't offer Glaber Torres a contract. I'm like, yeah, duh. They've been trying to get rid of him for 2 years while also simultaneously batting him leadoff all throughout the postseason. Very weird dynamic there with Glaber and the Yankees, but that is over. So good luck to Glaber in Detroit. We're going to take one more break. And when we return, all you lovely Canadians listening to this, buckle up. It's time to talk Vlad Jr. We'll be right back on Baseball Barbershop. Welcome back to Baseball Barbcast. Jordan Schusterman here with Ben Nicholson Smith. And I was not going to invite Ben on here and not have him speak on behalf of the Toronto Blue Jays. No, I'm just kidding. But Ben covers the
Blue
Jays. Of course he does.
Please.
Of course he does.
Let's not do that.
He's going to speak on behalf of Ben Nicholson Smith. That's all right. I brought him here to
speaking
do.
Speaking for one, folks.
He has been talking ball for the last 50 minutes with me, and I've had a great time. But now it is time for him to give me some answers, some insight into the Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Toronto Blue Jays extension discussions. We had a bit of updates here, courtesy of Vlad Jr. himself, who went on a podcast in his native Dominican Republic and spoke about the situation very openly in a way that you basically never hear, right? Like, I would say 98% of extension discourse is, we're going to keep that private, or that doesn't benefit me, or like either from the team or player side, like that's between us and whatever. Vlad's like, here's what's going on.
I've often said that Vladdy could never be a major league manager because he wants to challenge every play. Now we can also cross off GM because he just leaks everything. So it's a good thing he's a great player.
Okay. So he is a great player. So Ben, what did we learn? What did we learn from this podcast appearance? That is relevant, and I think even with all of their failed pursuits of top free agents, this is still the most important thing for the Toronto Blue Jays for the next month plus. So let's talk about it. Where are we at?
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, this is the decision negotiation that will impact the next 10 years of this franchise one way or the other. He's the best player, and he's about to be a free agent. So it was very interesting to hear this interview with Abriendo Sports and see it too, right? You can watch the video clip and see him discussing this. He shared a lot of info about where he's at as far as extension talks. The talks are ongoing, he said. He said that there's a deadline in place, which will be the first day the pitchers and catchers report for a full workout in Dunedin, Florida, coming up in February. So that gives the Blue Jays about 6 weeks' time to get an extension done, or he's going to hit the open market and be a free agent, listen to offers from all 30 teams this coming fall. So that's the timeline that's in place. That's new information that was not out there publicly until Vladdy said this on the interview. He also said that they had offered him $150 million a few years ago. That didn't get it done. He said that there was a $340 million offer in that neighborhood, he said, that had occurred in the course of this offseason. That's believed to be before the Soto deal for 765. So clearly talks are ongoing. Clearly that number is over 340. I think that's pretty obvious given that he declined that. And we'll see where it would have to land, right? This is really the interesting discussion, but the stakes are super high for the Blue Jays, more so than for Vlad Jr. I mean, they're high for him too, because if he goes out there and he has kind of a tepid season, then it's not going to be great for him and he might, not get quite the deal that he's looking for. But end of the day, Jordan, this guy's 25 years old. 25. So he is in a great position to get a massive deal.
This is the other thing about his honesty here, and this extends back just before this offseason, and is also a bit of a difference when we're talking about these situations where players are normally playing it as straight as can be. I'll listen to offers and we'll see where it goes. Do you believe him when he says he wants to be with the Blue Jays? I do, but you would know better than me.
Yeah, I believe it. I think that, I've been around Vladdy his whole career since he signed as an amateur, and certainly his whole major league career in Toronto. He genuinely seems to like playing in Toronto. He seems to enjoy his life, and including being in Toronto. So I think that's true. I will add to that. Mm-hmm. I sense a comfort, if it needs to go down that path, that he would be comfortable hitting free agency too. He's not saying that part.
100%.
But I think he would be comfortable, as he should be.
As he should be. However, I do think that the reason I feel strongly about this, and we could just go back and forth, what's the number? You have the guy. Like, he's there. You've had him. You've developed him. He's happy. He loves being a Blue Jay. He's been a Blue Jay his whole life. They've spent these last few off seasons chasing these just wild swings, right? I mean, whether it is an Ohtani, whether it is Soto, right? But they're trying because they're like, that's the guy. We have to go all in on that. Like, he is worth it. But you already have one of the guys that I believe is worth it to build around as a franchise player. Yes, he's a first baseman. I get that. Yes, he has had some ups and downs. But as you mentioned, he's 25. It's not to me, the situation is right in front of you. You have the franchise player. You have developed him. You have brought him in. You have seen him rise to become one of the best hitters in the world. And he says, there is a way that I can be here forever. I could be the greatest Blue Jay of all time. It's right there. And if you're not able to land these other, to go all to extreme degrees to lure someone to Toronto and they'd be like, oh no, how can we not bring these guys in? He's right there. And I guess it's unreasonable. We said who would be a bad GM. Yeah, it doesn't make sense, but give him whatever he wants. I would be pushing so much harder, and I really hope they do. I've been saying this for 2 years now. Stop worrying about, just make sure you have this guy in place, because if he's gone, you are in a very dark place as an organization. Yeah. And while there are still a lot of questions about everything around him, and I'm sure he has those too, there's a number here that will get him to be a Blue Jay for life. And I hope that they get there, because you have the thing. And I don't think you should be overthinking it to that degree. Of course, there's a negotiation involved. And I know it's going to be uncomfortable to go to $500 million. I just feel like if you're already willing to spend it on guys that you don't have as your guy, to me, it's like, come on, let's just.
Yeah. And I don't know that I don't think they would have to get to $500 million. We'll see where that number goes.
Yeah, I'm just throwing, this is not,
yeah, you know better than me, but sure. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. But I have certain guesses, obviously. But I think that to your point, if he hits free agency and signs with the Giants in a year's time, or signs with the Yankees, right? Whatever the case, all of a sudden, are you looking at a Blue Jays team where the heart of their order is Will Wagner, Ernie Clement and Joey Loperfido, because that's,
well,
you got to, you know, this is a tough division.
Listen, I love
with
Alan
all due
Rodin.
Respect to those guys, with all due respect to those guys, I'm not trying to dunk on anyone here, but I just mean like Vlad Jr., like this guy is a different level of offensive producer. And, you know, it would be one thing if like when Jose Bautista hit free agency after hitting the bat flip and he was like 34 years old and it was like, here, he's this iconic part of the franchise history. And, you know, should the Jays extend him, pay him what he wants, whatever the case, there was a whole discussion around that at the time. And I get that. And there was a case to be made for signing Batista and Encarnacion at that time. But we're talking about someone now who's 25 years old. His first season, once he signs his free agent deal, will be age 27. He's there's so much more prime time left for Vladdy. And there's a downside risk that he becomes Prince Fielder and there's no production after age 27, 28. And of course, that would be horrible. But you have to trust at a certain point, your team of physical therapists and your team of trainers and strength and conditioning people to get the most out of these athletes. And you have to trust the player. And if you don't do that, maybe blow it all up and trade them. But I just, if you trust him at all, like, I think there's a clear path to building around him.
And to me, I think that there is still going to be some level of calculated risk, as I have to imagine there isn't literally any extension of this magnitude, whether we're talking about Fernando Tatis Jr. or Julio or Bobby Witt or whatever. Like, some of those extensions immediately look like underpays and some of them immediately look like overpays and whatever. That's when you're talking about deals of this magnitude, that's part of it. But as you mentioned, the stakes here for Toronto as an organization are just so massive. And that is where Vladdy's leverage is and where he should keep it. And I just think that, like, you don't have the opportunity to keep guys, to have these guys in the first place, let alone reasonably with a straight face be like, there's an MVP in front of him. You know, like, that's just not a player you have access to. And he's already on your team and wants to be there.
Exactly. So, and he's not a perfect player. There are flaws with his game, right? He's not a shortstop who's, you know, stealing 40 bases in 45 attempts. That would be nice. But there's only one Bobby Witt Jr. Of course. So you work with what you have. And Vlad Jr. can legitimately go out there. And would anyone be surprised if in the course of the next 5 years, he posts three seasons with a 150 WRC plus or higher? Like, not at all. That honestly wouldn't even be surprising at all. And so if you have that guy, I don't know, man. It's just, to me, seeing him like as a Diamondback in 2 years' time, it would be I don't know.
Ken Kendrick's really stretching now.
Kendrick's just splashing out.
Here's the other last point I want to make about this. And then we'll do a couple more Blue Jays topics and get out of here. Another comp, okay? This is where I also want your insight. It's not like this is a situation where Giancarlo Stanton with the Marlins, okay, he's amazing, you know, generational offensive performer. Here's a, you know, gigantic contract. And now, like, we're like underwater. We like can't even function financially because the Blue Jays can afford this, obviously, right? Not only can they afford to just do it right now, but like it should not hamstring them for the next 10 years.
Look at their money on the books. Their big commitments on the books are like Jose Berrios and Gariel Rodriguez. Like, they're fine.
So it's like, if he's the guy making 30, whatever, $40 million for the next 10 years, great. Like, that, he should be your highest paid player anyway.
Yeah. They're a CBT team. They should be. Yeah.
Like, so it's not, that's the part where the risk is, yes, of course, there's risk in giving any player that much money, but it's not a situation where it's like, well, okay, we paid Vladdy, now we're done, we're tapped out. Like, no, it should be the opposite. If anything, it should be motivating you and him and everything to really, you know, build something.
No,
and
that's
really where so that's really where I feel like this should not be that difficult, but it's a negotiation and he should be holding out for the money, because yes, he absolutely has a ton of money waiting for him next winter, assuming he has a big season. I hope they get it done, because it would really bum me out. It would bum me out a lot if he, and it's not about him signing with the Yankees or signing anywhere else. It's just like, he should be the Blue Jay. He should be the guy that's just there forever and is the greatest player ever. That's what it should be, in my opinion.
Yeah. And I mean, I said this about Juan Soto when he was a free agent, but I think that the Mets essentially bought a Hall of Fame plaque there with Soto.
Yeah.
You know, I think that this could be his legacy team, and he could hit his 500th home run with the Mets and win a World Series with the Mets. And Vlad Jr. has a chance to do that too. Maybe he's not, you know, he's not the hitter that Juan Soto is. Juan Soto is at a different level. But Vlad Jr. is still really, really good, impactful offensive player who is just in his prime. So, you know, it's a big decision. You never want to be cavalier about it. I understand you can't just say, you know, give him all the money he wants because there's there are checks and balances.
Easy
and,
for me to say. I get that.
Front offices are employed to get the best deal done. But within that, it's like, get a deal done. If you believe in the player, which, you know, we'll learn a lot about how much the Blue Jays believe in Vlad Jr. and what their potential alternative path is. And I think, you know, it's been a really tough time for Jays fans. So it would be nice for Jays fans to have a franchise player in place that you can root for.
100%. And again, I have a lot more Blue Jays questions, but I want to at least hit a couple more moves before we say goodbye. But I guess that's the other thing. If I do have one other Toronto question is, okay, let's hope and believe that this is the number one priority, and not that signing Vlad to an extension and not doing much else is like a successful offseason. But I mean, honestly, I do feel like that's a big thing. Big picture, that's the most important thing they can do right now. I mean, as we know, they've tried on a lot of these other guys. Is there a path forward? Let's move Vlad to the side. They get an extension or not. Is there a path forward to an offseason that the Jays fans are feeling good about? Because it sure doesn't feel that way.
No. I think Jays fan, and I understand it. I'm no judgment here. I get it. I get the frustration that this fan base has felt. It's, you know, to be swept in the wild card round 2 years in a row, to have the dismal, dismal season that they had this past off season, farm system not in great shape, roster not in great shape. Why would fans be in a good spot? So I do not think that there is a pathway to really this fan base feeling great. I do think that there are possibilities where, again, in a league where the Tigers and Royals make the playoffs, in a league where 6 out of 15 teams make the playoffs, you should be competing. There's no excuse not to be competing. They have a lot of work to do to get to that point, though. They need to add starting pitching. They need to add power. Those are two pretty big holes on the roster as of this moment. If they can do that, maybe, you know, let's just brainstorming here. If it is a Santander and then you trade for Steven Matz, for argument's sake, I'm not saying that's like super exciting, but you can kind of compete in that scenario. But this division's super deep. And I think the Yankees, Red Sox, and Orioles are all clearly better than the Blue Jays, and the Rays are good too. So, you know, to me, the Jays are the worst team in a stacked division.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I'll just say this before we do some quick moves and say goodbye. I've already said this about a couple players here, whether it's a DeGrom, whether it's a Senga. Bo Bichette is just beyond fascinating for 2025. I mean, he's his own conversation. We're not even talking about him in an extension conversation, trades, whatever. He is just so interesting going into next year and so important. Both of those things. I mean, just so many questions about Bo Bichette. I imagine it is something you have been grappling with too, but he's just someone that when I look up this roster, I'm just like, man, what is Bo Bichette? I imagine that's something you've thought a few times at this point.
Totally. And I think that Bo Bichette's poised to have a really good year. He dealt with a bunch of injuries last year, but he's said to be recovering well in his walk year as well, in his prime. He's going to be super motivated. He always brings a huge amount of competitive drive to everything that he does. And I think it's going to lead to good results. You just look at the track record. I mean, it's not too much of a leap of faith. We're talking about a really, really good player here. So I think he's got a 280 average and probably a 3-WAR season coming up in 2025.
Ben, I'm pro Bo for sure. He'll cash in too. And it is not going to be with the Blue Jays, I don't think, but he should be a rich man next winter, I believe. I know we have a bunch more moves, but we are running long, so I'm going to pick just one of them because I want your Toronto Blue Jays opinion. I'm going to save a lot more for Thursday, so we'll talk about Eloy and McCutchen and Josh Bell and all those guys later. The Phillies signed Joe Ross. I'm not asking your opinion about Joe Ross. I'm asking your opinion about Jordan Romano because this seems to be kind of the last move for the Phillies. Joe Ross is like filling the swingman role, their pitching staff, obviously after training for Lizardo. But their bullpen now, it seems like they're done with Jeff Hoffman. And their bet on Jordan Romano is really interesting to me. So obviously his end of his very accomplished tenure in Toronto was a little bit disappointing. What is your confidence level in him? Were you surprised that they are really banking big on Jordan Romano? I don't know. I know they have other closing options, but what did you make of that move?
I see it as no such thing as a bad one-year deal. I like it for the Phillies. I like Jordan Romano as a competitor, as a pitcher.
As a Canadian.
As a Canadian, no doubt. Mark Montario's own. And very, very accomplished closer, over 100 saves in the big leagues. One-year deal. I like it for the Phillies. Now, you compare that to what Jeff Hoffman did for the last couple, well, especially for the last year in the bullpen, it's going to be tough to match that. Like, you know, they're losing a lot out of that bullpen. You know, we'll see what that means. I know they've added to their rotation, so maybe they can make up for it there. But it is, yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a sure thing, just given the way he, you know, he had arthroscopic surgery, for anyone who wasn't following, in July, didn't come back to the major league. So there's a little bit of health uncertainty here, but he was said to be throwing well in bullpens leading up to the deal with the Phillies. Obviously had interest from other teams, and so he's on the right track probably to start the season healthy and to be a factor in that bullpen from day one. But yeah, I think the risk is probably priced into that deal, where it is a one-year deal. Otherwise, he's probably talking 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, just an interesting, obviously poorly timed, because with relievers, it's just so, not random, but just, you know, unpredictable when they have their best season and when they're healthy and all those things. And obviously for Romano, the timing didn't exactly work out. But I can see it now. In 2 months, the Phillies will be in Dunedin playing spring training, and in comes Jordan Romano for the fourth inning, and the crowd gives him a nice little cheer. You might even give him a nice golf clap in the press box.
I think you can lock that prediction in. I'm not going to be clapping from the press box on that one.
Too much of a professional.
You got to pick your. That's not going to be the moment.
That's true.
But yeah, that will happen. Lock it in. For anyone who made it this far on the podcast, Jordan just delivered a lock it in prediction.
And listen, that's why I had to finish with that, because whenever Ben and I are at a game together, World Series, you know, whatever, we are making some of the most ridiculously specific predictions.
We didn't go nearly far enough off the board here.
No, we didn't. I saved everyone. I just want to see. Now I want to pull up Blue Jays spring training schedule. I want to call it. What do we think? Because you know, closer, he doesn't have to come in the ninth. He could come in
early.
He could start. He could maybe start the. Okay, let's see. No, where are they playing the Phillies?
Inning.
Okay, here we go. February 26th.
Yeah.
Wednesday.
But what if they
afternoon?
Ramp them up slowly? What if they ramp them up slowly?
Oh, that's true. All right, let's go a little bit later.
Okay, I think later.
All right, okay, March 21st.
Yeah.
Split squad game, but we're at home.
Yeah.
So we have some of the guys.
Short bus ride over. He makes it.
Right. So we have the Phillies, Jordan Romano, third inning. This is at a Friday afternoon. He's going to come in the third inning.
Yeah.
And there's just going to be kind of an acknowledgement of like, oh, there's our guy.
Oh, the crowd will love it. The crowd will love it.
The lively Dunedin crowd.
Yeah. You know, you've got, fourth inning? You still got some regulars in at that point in spring. Like, they're trying to get their ABs.
But you want Romano facing, like.
Yeah, exactly. So I think
you got to get him ready for high leverage.
Yeah. You know, you might be seeing like an Addison Barger, Jonathan Class A, Tyler Heineman trio. Like, we're talking big leaguers here. We're not talking prospects.
I don't know.
Like, these, those guys
honestly,
are competing for spots.
Let's add in this. Ready? He faces Vlad fresh off the extension. Boom.
Wow. Wow.
Romano versus Vlad in Dunedin after Vlad gets an extension. That is my official prediction to finish off this episode.
There's just a couple Canadians playing ball. I'm here for it.
That's exactly right. Future maybe Team Canada will eventually get Vlad to play for them. All right. That's it. Once Freddie Freeman's retired. That's that's it. We are done. We had more moves to get to, but who cares? Ben Nicholson-Smith of Sportsnet, you have done your job that I asked you to do very last minute so well. I look forward to doing it again a year from now when Jake is in God knows where. He's in Madagascar and it's like, oh, sorry, Jordan, you got to find a co-host. And I'm like, well, I know who to call.
Exactly. Whenever Jake is like 7 to 9 time zones away and you need someone to break down moves, call me up. I'm happy to do it, Jordan. So thank you. And thanks to the listeners of the pod as well.
Of which you are. Will you be listening to this?
Of course, a loyal listener. Well, you know, I might skip this one. But when it's you and Jake, when it's you and Jake, I listen to, I'm going to say 90%. There's the odd episode I can't get to. But I'm going to say 90 to 95%. I'm familiar with the Scobo. You know, yes. I'm with you guys.
Well, I'm sorry that you don't have an episode to listen to.
I know.
For this week, because you did it. But I appreciate the time. Everyone should go follow Ben on whatever social media platform and let him know that his Jay's opinions are very good, because they are. Ben, you're the best. Producer Andrew Hartz, thank you so much for making this show possible. You can email us at baseballbarbiecast@gmail.com. And we'll be back on Thursday in 2025. Jake will not be there, but I will, and I am very excited. So thank you all for a wonderful year of podcasting. Thank you all for listening. Have a good new year, and we'll talk to you on Thursday.